It's just Cybert Rail 12. We got to the point where you just entered Austria a day or two after the V-Day, or the surrender. What happened then?
Well, the first point we stopped at was the lakes at the Werder Sea. Well, they sent out forward units to wreck it. I'm glad I wasn't on those. Because what I forgot to mention earlier, one of the when we went back from came back from Greece to Italy, that Major Tullock had called aside Venables and myself and said, "How would you two like to be snipers?" And the life of sniper wasn't very long, because they were the ones, it was the snipers that were sent out on reconnaissance. And talking of reconnaissance, that reminded me of this. So I can't recall our exact words, but Venables and myself, we conveyed that we would not like to be snipers. So Major Tullock said, "Well, never mind." He said, "Come down," he said, "and try out these rifles with these sniper sights on." So we went to a slope somewhere where was you could fire into a bank. And he had a pair of these small targets, 6-inch targets. So he put them up and really went down about 50 feet. He said, "Now," he said, "you can see that bullseye as clearly as anything." He said, "Blow them out." So we, he said, "Five rounds." So we both fired five rounds. And he went up and he picked up the targets, and there was a hole in either of them. So I said, "This is perfect." He said, "From now on, your company's snipers." But then, of course, the war finished. So we were very fortunate. And
you'd missed deliberately, and he knew that then.
Of course he did. But no, his company's snipers were sort of ones that were sent out on reconnaissance, and it wasn't a very pleasant job. But anyway, we stopped at the Werder Sea, and the wrecking units with the armoured cars, they went forward. And then we moved forward again.
Anything happened there?
No, it was all very quiet. We moved forward again, and the next I remember, whether it could have been the same day or the following day, I don't know, but the next I remember was a place called Judenburg, where we joined up with the Russians. And when I say joined up, I don't mean that we actually came in contact with each other. There was a bridge, there was a river through Judenburg, and as we approached the bridge, could see the Russian tanks on the other side. The moment we started to approach, the Russian tanks withdrew, and then they came back in force, and it went on like this, backwards and forwards, with both the British and the Russians for about an hour or so, and then it sort of settled down. They kept to their side, and we didn't venture across the bridge. The next thing was, and I remember this very, very clearly, we were in some sort of building that had been occupied by the SS. The floor was smothered in thousands and thousands of photographs of people with numbers on them, and tattoos with numbers on them. And there were thousands of these photographs there, and I was picking them up, looking at them. And chaps were ferreting through the various rooms. I hadn't been in there very long before we were all ordered out by the officers. We were out, and the officers were left in the building. Now, this is denied. I've heard it denied. But what was said at the time was that there was jewellery in that building and that the officers had it. And I mentioned this to an officer some months back, and he denied that it had ever happened. But made a touch back and told me that when he was in the mess one night and he heard the officers talking, listened to them talking, and one officer had been back on leave to England, was saying that he had obtained £600 for one ring alone. Now, that is what I understood could happen. There's no doubt in my mind about what I'm telling you. Whether it actually occurred or not is a different matter. But that is what was said at the time, and I'm telling you what the major touch Batman told me, that he heard one officer say that he got £600 for a ring alone. But I've had an officer say to me that all this never happened. So that was that. After we left Judenberg, and the next I remember is a place called Wietersdorf. And it must have been a little hamlet of some sort, small, because the only thing that seemed to be around major building was a cement factory. And there was a lot of graffiti there from English prisoners of war written up there in places. I don't recall anything particularly incidents there, except Bunny Austin, I think it was, he got hold of one of these Russian pistols, which was had a very long bullet, and you've got a lot of cannons firing, and this quite frequently happened, that people were accidentally firing guns, and they usually be told where to go the moment you saw anybody with a pistol or something. That was that. That was a place, I think, where I was. There was a trout river, which I used to. Any spare time I had, that which was not very long, because I think we were there quite a short while. That I made some hooks out of some pins, which weren't very successful because they had no barb to keep the trout on. But occasionally I'd get a trout out, and I'd light a little fire somewhere and sit and cook my trout. Remember Peg, Private Peg. Peggy, as he was called, he saw me eating this trout one day, and he said, "Where you get that?" I said, "Up there, there's a place where we can usually get a trout. Whether you can keep it on the line or not is a different thing." So I had a bullet used as a weight to convey it along, and there was a mill race, it was a race of some sort where it came through, and you tossed the bullet on the pin at one end, and it would be swept straight down, and by the time you'd got to the end, there was a trout on it. The trouble was keeping the trout on the hook. And I told Peggy, I said, "Look, threw one. I said, do take this, throw it in up there," and I said, "You'll have a trout on the end by the time it gets there." So he did this, and straight away, there was a trout there. It was quite a whopper. And he got his face on the pin, and he got it out. He said, "I'll run back and bring you back a big box to put them in." Of course, that was the last one. One of those trout that he caught. The next time he had a go, the damn thing came off. And that was a loose trout as well. And by Peggy was so incensed, he just drove straight in after it. He crawled back soaked, he never caught any more. But that's all I remember about me, this dog.
Were you allowed to talk to the Austrians, or was
that? No, it was supposedly non-fraternising, but of course, when we entered Austria, there were these Austrian flags out everywhere. They couldn't all say that they'd been in resistance, but none of them were Nazis. You know, it was like the French. I've always said to my wife, there were more French in the resistance than there were Frenchmen, which maybe I mean a bit cynical. The only Frenchman I encountered were in the German army.
So what was your next move from there?
Let me see. I have an idea that somewhere around this time, they started up what they called LEAP and Python. Python was returned to the UK for people that had been abroad for 5 years, and LEAP was leave in advance of Python. You had to have been abroad 4 years. Well, I'd already been abroad over 4 years or more then, and so I was one of the first to come back on LEAP. Funny enough, I was looking at my paper the other day, and I see that from 1941, early 41, I had one leave. I didn't have an embarkation leave, but I had a leave in early, a week's leave in early 41. And in the following 4 years, nothing at all. So when I came back to England on that month's leave, that was the first leave I believe I've had in over 4 years. But I think it was at that time that they came to an agreement between with the Russians to withdraw from part of Carinthia. The battalion headquarters was established at a town called Leibnitz during that time. When I came back, I'm sure the battalion was somewhere else, or the company, we'd moved into Carinthia. There were all sorts of things happening.
What kind of thing?
I think it was about this time they established horse patrols. We were told to we were all going to a particular spot where we could select a horse, and we would go out and mounted patrols.
Are they the old Cossack horses?
Well, there were thousands and thousands of these horses, and they'd come from the German army, presumably. A lot of them were horses that in the general run of things for pulling the carts that the Germans use. They made great use of these long four-wheeled carts. It's surprising, really, how I suppose little transport the Germans must have had, motorised transport, because they made great use of these horse carts. They were very long carts. And we went to somewhere, and there were hundreds of these horses. Some of them, they said, were Hungarian horses, beautiful, beautiful horses. And,
did you go on one of these horse patrols then?
Oh yes, quite a number of times. But the horse, I think this is a nice fat old horse. There's no life in this thing. I'm going to get this fat old horse. I'll be all right with this. So I chose a fat old horse. Some of the fellows had been captured and were ill as well, and they chose other sorts of horses. And anyway, I got this fat old thing and took that away. The trouble was that every time I got near it to get on the thing, it would look at you and it would put its foot straight on your foot. And if you've ever had a big fat horse standing on your foot, believe me, it's agony. And I'd have to heave and thump at this thing to get its foot off, and then eventually I'd get onto the wretched thing. Because they told you you've got to groom it and, you know, cherish the damn thing. And I used to have to take, wash and feed this wretched horse. And it never showed any appreciation at all. And then we'd go out on these horse patrols. I don't know what really, if it was very successful, because at that time there were still there were about two or three divisions of Ukrainians, Cossacks, divisions they called them, that were located about. They were set up in groups, they had their various camps, and invariably you'd come across a party of these on horse mounted. And if they saw you, these, I'll call them Cossacks, they would immediately start performing their tricks of standing up on the back of the horse or galloping past you. They did it deliberately several times. I'd be plodding along on this rapid horse, and a Cossack would come galloping by because he'd seen me on the damn thing. And this blasted horse would immediately take off after it. And I'd be sitting on the back of the thing. I was born in London. I knew nothing about horses, except that they pulled horse cars, they pulled dust cars. And I'd be bouncing around on this wretched horse until eventually most times I would fall off. And then it's spend several hours looking for it and getting it back again. So that was these horse patrols. They weren't very successful at all, not as far as I was concerned. But the...
What were you looking for?
Hmm? Oh, well, there were always stories that of Etes being hiding out in the villages of remote farmhouses. And I remember on one occasion we were told that the Etes were reported to be on the huts on the top of Mount Glockner, which was the highest mountain in Austria. So I was told. And they sent the whole battalion to go to the top of this place, and I remember I had a 3-inch mortar barrel to carry, and they weren't very pleased about that. But when we eventually got to the top of the Glockner, there were some huts there which were for the weather observation, I think, but the only people there were. They weren't in the huts, but we could see lines of refugees of some sort going across. It was still covered in snow, so it must have been perhaps midsummer, I don't know. It was certainly warm, but there was still snow on the top there. And remember these lines of refugees going from somewhere to somewhere. Lots of people at that time were making their way back to their own countries of origin. There were lots of people have been deported for forced labour and all sorts of things, and for months after the war had finished, you could, and they had the trains going, when they eventually got the trains going, you could see these trains moving back towards Italy, and the whole train, the windows, people were absolutely packed inside, hanging out of the windows on the sides, and all on the roof as well. And that was going on for quite a long time. It was a complete breakdown of law and order went on for months.
What about the forced repatriations? The Russians were sent back to the Russians and Croatians sent back to the...
That was later, though. That was a bit later. I think that when we first got into Austria, there was no heavy support of any sort. There were so many bridges had been blown that virtually the only force we had was the infantry and perhaps light armour. There was no heavy artillery or anything like that. And for a while, I can't remember exactly how long, but it must have been quite some time, the army there, the British army, couldn't have taken on the, it would have been risky, shall we say, to have taken on the Ukrainians or Cossacks. And it wasn't until the bridges and roads had been repaired and some of the rail links repaired that they felt strong enough to tackle. So it was some months that we had to be careful that there was no friction between the Ukrainians and the British troops because they outnumbered us. I think there were about 30 or 40. So I'm not quite sure now. There were a lot of them, but in all probability they could have tackled them, but there's no point in unnecessarily losing any life at that time. So things went on for quite a while before then. As I say, we had our horse patrols, and there were all sorts of things going on with the lads. Everybody had let their hair down by then. I think they had started the mobilisation, but people were just running riot to a certain extent. They were doing silly things, everybody was. You know, they think quite frequent to climb onto the roof and drop a handful of bullets down the chimney into the boiler below, and you know, hear all going up and everybody scattering. That sort of thing was going on frequently. And also, of course, non-fraternisation or not, a lot of the fellows formed alliances with the local women. There was one chap in particular was, as the time went on, we had women coming from all over the place looking for him, fathering their children. I think this particular chap must have to my knowledge, have at least five or six children or plus in Austria. And of course, there were lots of prisoners, ex-POWs from the British Army. They had formed alliances with the people that they'd on the farms and that. In many cases, they were the only sort of mainstay of the farm. They were menfolk, the Austrian menfolk. A lot of them had either been taken prisoners or wounded or killed, and these prisoners didn't want to return immediately to England in due course. We'd find them and they'd say, you know, don't say anything, but we knew they were there, and they were quite happy to let the time pass, months pass, before they would come in and be returned. So that was going on. There were also all sorts of little things happening. There was, I remember Tom Reynolds, I forget where we were based, but I remember the hearing a lot of cheering going on one morning, and I looked out of this window along the road, and I could see a moving mass of men. And as it got nearer, I realised it was a car, and there must have been a whole platoon in and on this car. And as it got nearer, I saw it was Tom Reynolds driving it, and it was a six-wheeler Mercedes, which he found in a barn, covered over with hay. It was a German staff car of some sort, but we used it for a couple of days going back to us forward to the cookhouse, and Lieutenant Green, he was frankly spotted it. He said, "Well, yes, I can't have this. Using this to go to the cookhouse." He said, so he commandeered it for himself, and he had it for about a day. And Major Tullock had it. Next time I saw it, he had it for about 2 days, and the next time I saw it, Colonel Welshman was in it. I don't know how long he had it, but eventually I saw the Brigadier with it, and then it disappeared altogether. He didn't have it for very long. So where that car finished up, I don't know. I wouldn't mind betting it finished up back in England somewhere. where were we anyway?
Well, just generally going through your time in Austria. Any other things that happened of interest?
I think, Pat, from your point of view, the most interesting thing would have been when they eventually decided that they would round up the Cossacks and send them back.
Which, remember that?
I used to go into their camp and sometimes and have if you could call it, a meal with them. It was always the same. They had boxes of about the size of a small fish box they used to pack the sardines in. And the first time I saw them. They opened this, went in to have a meal with them. They opened up this box, layer of salt, and they would put underneath this would be a sort of massive pork fat. Their pig must have been very fatty, but it would be a big piece, a side of pork, which was virtually solid fat, and they would cut it up into squares about a size of a small apple, and dip it in batter, and then into boiling oil. And this seemed to be the sole thing that they had to eat. And when you, I had them several times with them, and when you took one of these, it'd be hot, and you put it in your mouth and had a bite. The fact it was absolutely streamed down your mouth, you know, it sort of burst out of your mouth and down your face. It was unbelievable. But so they seemed to thrive on it, or thought they did, I don't know. But that's what they were living on at that time, of the camps I went into.
Now, what happened when you're saying they actually decided to move against them?
Oh, when they decided to move against them, some chaps, they began to dislike the Russians by then. There were the Russians in general, I mean, not particularly these fellows. There were reports of the way the Russian soldiers were behaving in their occupied territory. There were also odd bodies of men roaming the countryside, and at that time the Austrians were so terrified of these groups of people that were roaming around, the Russians and anybody else, that in many cases that this non-fraternisation broke down, because they were only too pleased to have a British soldier in the house with them. By what means they lured the British soldier to stay the night with them, it was down to the women. And so lots of the chaps were more or less at every opportunity when they weren't required to be on duty somewhere, were living with the Austrians. So the fraternisation started to break down. But when the move came against the Russians, the Cossacks, some were sympathetic towards them and some weren't. In general, I don't think people, the soldiers, particularly cared one way or the other. I know that Lieutenant Green, who was still then our platoon officer, called us together. And he said that first of all, we were not to let the Russians know that they were going to be handed back. Secondly, that the Russians had said that they had British prisoners of war, they were holding British prisoners of war, and they were not going to release them until these Ukrainians or Cossacks were sent back. And the third thing I remember him saying very clearly is that these particular people were responsible for massacres in France. That there was a General Vlasov, was the name he mentioned, and I can't recall the name of the place he mentioned, but it was in France, and it was a village that where the people had been herded into a church and had been set fire to. That is the story he told us. So we should have no sympathy at all for them. So it must have been the following day. We went down from various platoons. And the Russians were herded along the road. Certainly tanks and armoured cars. And we...